All right, boys, welcome back to another episode of the Empty Gym Podcast. My name is Adam Pollard, joined here always with Jack Hobson and Mikey T. I'm taking over the host chair today. Jack's feeling a little bit under the weather, so wants to try to talk as little as possible. Had a weekend, so he's feeling pretty under the weather. Today, we're talking some ball, talk a little bit about awesome Saturday we had, talk a little bit of some changes in the AP Top 25. And then it's almost March, so talk a little bit of the bubble teams. But first off, that Saturday was awesome. Had tons and tons of good games. Mikey T, what was your favorite game from Saturday?
Well, I'll start local. My favorite game from Saturday was a game I had boots on the ground, a game our good pal Jack Hobson had boots on the ground in, and that was the Villanova-Butler game. Double overtime, thrilling victory for the Bulldogs on Saturday. Definitely increased their chances to make the NCAA tournament. Just a huge win, a game they didn't lead at all during regulation in. They didn't lead until overtime. Just an incredibly resilient win for the Bulldogs in a classic Big East matchup.
Yeah, Mike, as you said, boots on the ground for both of us at this game. I was really pumped up all day for this game. The 3 o'clock starts on Saturdays are a little tough because it's like, at least when it's during the week and it's a night game, like you got class and stuff all day to like kind of take your mind off it. But I woke up at about like 6:30 and I was just really jacked up for this game, and waiting around was feeling like it was taking forever. And then we finally get to the start. And then we start out down 17-3. So that was a little rough. It was like, fuck, like, or, excuse me. It was just tough start to the game. Then kind of started to claw back a little bit, got a bunch of stops in a row in that first half. Just couldn't really score at all. And then we got it down to, I think, like 5 in the second half at one point, and then didn't close out the half very well. Ended up going into the locker room, down 9. And then we keep track of 4-minute wars. So like every TV timeout is a 4-minute war. I believe we won the first war of the second half, I think like 4-2. And then the second war was 2-1. So it's like 8 minutes had gone by and neither team had gotten into double digit points that half yet. So we were getting a bunch of stops, but just couldn't score at all. And it felt like that was kind of our opportunity to swing the game, but didn't quite happen. And then Villanova got it up to like 11 or something like that. Then DJ Davis just kind of went off, hit like 5 threes in like 5 minutes or something like that. It was crazy. That leaner he had when we were down 5 with about a minute left, it cut it to 2. One of the craziest shots I've seen in person. And then obviously Jameel with the dunk sends it to overtime. And then we get into overtime, kind of go back and forth a little bit, get a stop down 2 with about 30 seconds left or so, I think. And then come down, DJ gets a layup to tie up the game and send it into double overtime. And then from there, kind of went back and forth again, and then got a 2-point lead with under a minute left, got a stop, and then it was kind of free throws from there. Dixon scared me a little bit when we were up 4 and hit that 3 to cut it to 1, but from there, Dogs kind of took over. So that was just Hinkle magic at its finest, for sure.
Yeah, Jack, you did mention DJ Davis. Was 10 for 20 from the field, 5 for 11 from the three-point line, and then 3 for 4 from the free throw line. But how was that atmosphere at Hinkle? It was probably awesome.
Mike, go ahead. I'll let you say it from a fan perspective.
From my experience, and I've seen many games at Hinkle Fieldhouse, that's how it's been ever since I've been here. I don't know, because I came in a little later than Hobby did, but it was a crazy atmosphere. Every time Butler would score a bucket or even make a free throw, the building was loud and in charge. It was a little weird, too, because my dad's a big Villanova fan. So kind of felt for him a little bit because that was a tough one for the Cats. But incredible atmosphere at Hinkle. 9,100 people on their feet. Not a single seat that I saw wasn't taken. So just a great atmosphere.
Yeah, that was probably in my Mount Rushmore of games at Hinkle. Living a little bit closer than Mike and being here for a year longer than Mike, I've been to more games at Hinkle than him, but this was right up there with the best of them. I'd say like this, Xavier last year was crazy too, with that being on a Friday night and everything. I think it was 2017 when Jorgensen hit the three from the logo against Villanova when they were number one. That was pretty loud too. And then Gonzaga back in 13 with the Roosevelt Jones floater buzzer beater. I think those are kind of my top four. I don't really know how to order them, but
were you at both of those games?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, but this was right up there with all those. They're probably 1A, 1B, 1C, 1D, with how like electric an atmosphere Hinkle was, and we really needed it too. Excuse me, we got two wins in a row against DePaul and Georgetown, games that you need to win to keep the tournament hopes alive at all, and then got a big win over a Villanova team that has shown flashes about how good they could be. Now they're on kind of a little down streak a little bit. I think this was their fourth loss in a row. They're a good team. They're a lot better than their record is. So this was a big win for us. And now got two tests coming up over the next week with Creighton on the road on Friday and UConn on the road on Tuesday. But the atmosphere was, to go back to the question, the atmosphere was amazing. It was one of the coolest things I've seen at Hinkle for sure.
Yeah, speaking of atmospheres, another Big East game where the atmosphere was just unreal was the Providence-Georgetown game at the Dunk. That game was awesome, and I was actually telling these boys before we start recording, with me being out here in Mountain Time, that game started at 10:30 for me, and I was working all morning, so I didn't get to watch the game. But I was on my phone scrolling through X and looking at all the videos of the fans storming into the court, like the fans were fighting before the game, all the signs about Ed Cooley. I mean, it was just an electric atmosphere, but that game was awesome.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, I thought for how electric that atmosphere was, I kind of thought Providence was going to come in angry and kind of just run away with the game. But Georgetown hung in there and played a good game. And, you know, I don't want to grill Ed Cooley too much because I do like him as a coach. And I understand the decision he made to go to Georgetown. Obviously, a lot of people weren't fans of it. But, you know, when it comes to money and taking care of your family, a guy's got to do what a guy's got to do. But I just wasn't a fan of him talking about how, like, did you see the interview with, like, the check or whatever, how, like, George or Providence should give him a check?
Yeah, bonus check.
It was just very uncalled for and, like, I don't know, unprofessional from him. And I don't know. He just kind of made the game about himself rather than, like, about his team. So I wasn't a fan of that post-game.
Yeah, I saw it was like they showed a clip of Kim English's press conference first and then followed by Cooley talking about the bonus check and everything. And like you said, Mike, I really like Cooley a lot too. I liked him a lot more before the move to Georgetown. I just thought that was kind of an odd move, but I get it with the money and everything. But I'm sure Providence would have ponied up to get that money for him too. But regardless, the atmosphere was electric there for sure. It worked out with our game being at three. Excuse me. That we got to see that first part of the game when Cooley was walking out of the tunnel, which was it looked like Providence was crazy. All the videos that came out of Providence were crazy. Like you said, Mike, I thought Providence would come out and run away with this game. Not quite. That didn't quite happen. Jaden Epps had a pretty spectacular game in terms of points. Wasn't super efficient from the field, but ended up with like 26 or something, I think, but kind of kept them in that game. But Georgetown's also a lot better team than they were last year. The record might not be showing it right now, but they're a lot more competitive staying in these games that they were just getting blown out in last year. So you can see Cooley's starting to get that program going, but Providence, even without Bryce Hopkins, still seems like a pretty solid team. And like I said, that Cooley going back into that environment. Like the dunk or the amp now is one of the most electric environments in college basketball anyways. But when you got a guy that makes an interconference move as head coach, like it just takes it to a whole nother level. And that place looked crazy.
Yeah. And I think Providence with Kim English is heading in the right direction. I think that program, I think I said it last episode, that program is going to be pretty good in the next coming years. Like I think it's headed in the right direction. But back to the Ed Cooley post-game press conference. I do think, yes, it was definitely unprofessional, you know, but I kind of understand it in a way because he goes in back into Providence where he knows he's going to get grilled for 40 minutes. And he did. Absolutely. I mean, even pregame, postgame, they were lighting him up, booing him, all that kind of stuff. But I kind of understand his perspective in a way where, he lost the game. That press conference after the game was kind of his only chance to take a small victory from that event right there. And so he kind of took a slight jab at Providence, just a little bit. So I kind of understand it in a way. He was trying to leave there with some sort of like moral victory for himself. So I kind of understand it. But it's definitely probably not the right move.
Yeah, I agree. It just kind of lacked professionalism a little bit. Like you said, I get him having the emotions, but there comes a time where at the same time, like I know you have these emotions, but you're also the head coach of a Division I program. Like, you got to know what to say, when to say it, what not to say, stuff like that. So I feel like he could have handled that a little bit better. I understand the emotions that he had going back there after he took that program when it was took over that program when it was kind of down in the dumps and brought it back to a nationally recognized program, a program that was making several NCAA tournaments. So I get that he has those emotions. Thinking about what he's done for that university and what he's done for that program, but at the same time, like you got to know the position that you're in and kind of what's professional and what's not professional in that position.
Just the perfect example of you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. That's what's happened at Providence with Ed Cooley.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's his fault, but I'm.
Yeah, like Jack said, when you make that interconference coaching change out of the blue, like you know that stuff's going to come your way.
Yeah.
Especially for a guy who grew up in Providence, too. And
yeah, he felt like he was the face of Providence basketball.
It's like
I felt like, I should say.
You like every coach always says that the job they're at is their dream job, and probably 99%
until you get a crap ton of money thrown in your face and say, hey, take this job.
Probably 99% of them don't actually mean it, but you felt like it was actually true with Cooley, with him being from Providence and everything, from the city. Wanted to play at Providence, wasn't quite good enough, ended up playing at Stonehill, which is D2, I think. But I think they're actually up to D1 now, but at the time they're D2. But yeah, it's just like you actually thought with Cooley that was really, truly his dream job, and for him to leave it for anywhere was surprising one, but to leave it for an in-conference rival whose program was in horrendous shape and is in better shape now, but still not great by any means. But I think that was the big part of Providence fans and especially Providence students really making sure that they knew that he knew that they were upset with him for sure.
Yeah, the Providence students definitely had a fun weekend.
Yeah, I saw some videos come out of Providence. And that game was at 12:30 Providence time, so they got going pretty early. But,
oh, yeah.
It looked like an awesome environment.
Anything left on that Providence-Georgetown game?
No. Nah,
all right, Jack, your Illini get a win over Indiana where they pretty much dominated the stat sheet. But only came out with an 8-point win, still a win regardless. But with just looking from, if you're just looking at the team stats and stat sheets, you would have thought that Illinois would have won this game by 25. So an 8-point win over Indiana. So Jack, where are you feeling with your Illini right now?
Yeah, I think it's obviously everything that has happened with Shannon coming back and everything. Not going to get into the legalities of that because I don't really understand what's going on with it either. I just know that he's back playing. And from a strictly basketball position, strictly basketball motives, it's tough to, one, to lose your best player in the middle of the year, and then two, to figure out, like, going through that process of figuring out how to play with them for whatever it was, 5-6 games, something like that. And then for him to come back after they had been really successful with him out, I think last year this team would have imploded. I think this year's team's a little bit more mature and able to handle that, but it's still going to take time for Shannon to kind of get back into it. It's still going to take time for the other guys, especially a guy like Marcus Domask, who really kind of became that star player on Illinois' team with Shannon gone. Had, I think, several 20-plus point games for sure. I think he even had two 30-point games while Shannon was out, at least one for sure. But I think for all those guys, it's tough to kind of reincorporate Shannon back in. I think it's going to take time. I'm not too concerned about it. I think, like I said, I think this team's much more mature and much more able to handle a situation like this than maybe last year's team would have been. But like I said, it's still going to take time. So obviously you had the Northwestern loss last week where it looked like we probably should have won that game, probably should have won it in regulation, not even let it get to overtime. But like I said, just going to take some time to kind of get all this figured out, and not too concerned right now, but maybe if this starts bleeding into the next couple weeks before we start getting this figured out or anything, that's when it might be time to be concerned about stuff. But big one tonight against Ohio State too. So that'll be a big one to kind of see if this team can go on the road to a team that's kind of been struggling lately with Ohio State. You know that they're in a position where they're kind of in do or die mode. So from there, this is a big game for them to kind of get back on the right track. Like obviously they won Saturday. That's great. IU didn't make a single three. So, I don't feel like you're gonna, I would have liked to win by more than eight against a team that didn't make a single 3-point shot. But yeah, another big one tonight on the road to kind of start to get that stuff figured out a little bit.
I think Illinois, although, you know, they didn't play the best against Indiana, I think their ability to win with all this imbalance throughout the course of the year with Shannon being out and then coming back has been very impressive. Like, obviously, they're not blowing out a team like Indiana at home while they should, but I think them being able to win these types of games and not drop one of these games is very impressive, and I think it's really just going to help them in the future. I think ever since Terrence Shannon was out, Domask is, and Javi, you can attest to this, Domask has really stepped up and, you know, became more of a first option scorer. Guys like Coleman Hawkins have stepped up. There's been a lot more production from other guys, and it kind of reminds me of like UConn when Klingon was out for a few weeks. It just really does. It helps develop other guys and get them more comfortable playing valuable minutes. So that if a guy like Shannon is out again with his legal issues or even gets into foul trouble, you have these other guys to step up and play valuable minutes when their star's not on the floor.
Yeah, definitely. And the emergence of Marcus Domask for Illinois has been huge. I mean, in the Indiana game, he had a double-double, 16 points, 10 rebounds. But yeah, Mike, I do think you're right. Their ability to kind of just rally around this team. And when Shannon was out, I mean, the Purdue game, when they played Purdue, I thought that game was not going to be pretty for Illinois, but that game was definitely a lot closer than I thought it would be. But yeah, you mentioned Coleman Hawkins as well. I have been vocal about my disagreements with Coleman Hawkins and his basketball ability, but I will be the bigger man here and say Coleman Hawkins has stepped up huge. So, Jack, you probably got to be pretty high on the Coleman Hawkins radar right now.
Yeah, after that Michigan game, the Coleman Hawkins radar was broken. I was so high on him, but excuse me, played solid against Northwestern, played solid against IU. Want to see that continue, even with Shannon back and him I feel like at the beginning of the year, it's kind of like, is it going to be Domask? Is it going to be Hawkins as that second option? And then especially with Shannon out, Domask really went above and beyond being that number one option in terms of a scorer. But you also saw some of Coleman Hawkins' best games. One, scoring, his shooting has been really good this year compared to previous years. His defense has been spectacular. I think they held ED to the lowest that he had all year, or like one of the fewest he's had all year, which still was like 17 points. But for a guy like ED, that feels like nothing from him. But yeah, Coleman Hawkins just continues to get better as this year goes on. And now he's kind of got to shift back into a kind of a third scoring role. But the other stuff that he does is still just as important. So I think he's going to keep continuing to do that well. And it's been fun seeing him play this well. When you've seen a bunch of flashes over the last 3 years, but hasn't been able to really sustain it as well as he has been this year. So it's been good to see Hawkins playing that well.
Yeah, definitely. Is there anything else in this game here?
I'm good.
Switching to the ACC, my Duke Blue Devils do get the big win at home against Clemson. Kind of a sloppy game, though, in a way. Just purely from, I guess you're looking at it from a season standpoint, it feels like this Duke team, it's frustrating sometimes because it feels like they haven't put together too many complete games, it feels like. They did play very well last night against Virginia Tech. That was nice to see. But definitely some controversy that came out of this game with the refs and foul calls late in the game, all that kind of stuff. But Duke rallies to come back. I think they were down 4 with like a minute and a half left or something like that. And we got two huge Jerry McCain steals. One of them we couldn't capitalize on, and then a Mark Mitchell steal. And then, but the major controversy was the Tyrese Proctor floater from the elbow that ultimately got a foul call and sent him to the line, made both of those free throws to put Duke up one. And then there was also a little bit of controversy on Clemson's last play. They threw a full court pass down to PJ Hall, who was running, and he ran right into Mark Mitchell. Probably a little contact, but I think all that contact was initiated by PJ Hall. Clemson fans are livid. Clemson's coach is livid. Joseph Girard was livid. He was actually went and started charging after a ref, but some assistant coaches and players refrained him from doing that. But when I first saw the Tyrese Proctor play when he came down, I was a little, I didn't like how it was going out. It was pretty much just one-on-one and take on three guys. When I first saw the play in real time and they called the foul, I 100% was like, yeah, we just got bailed out. And then, you know, you watch the replays. I actually think he got fouled 3 times in that play. A couple hand checks, and then I think he definitely got fouled in that floater. But when we first went up, I definitely thought we got bailed out. But I think just the timing of the call, and because people don't want to see games decided by free throws and foul calls. Like, I mean, I'm 100% in that same boat. I understand it. You don't want to see the game end on free throws on a foul call. Don't want to have the refs decide the game at the end. But I definitely think it was a foul. But aside from all that, Jared McCain had another huge game. Those two huge steals at the end of the game that kept us in the game allowed us to come back and for Tyrese Proctor to make those free throws. A little bit of an absence from Filipowski. He fouled out with a couple minutes to go, but he didn't do too well on the stat sheet. So that's something that you're a little nervous as a Duke fan because you want to see – we have to have Filipowski have at least an average game night in, night out, if we want to go far in this NCAA tournament and keep this season on the upward track that it is going on now. So, but that's kind of my soapbox there with the Duke Blue Devils. But as far as the game, did you guys see anything else there?
Yeah, I thought Proctor, obviously, we've kind of been looking for Proctor's sophomore leap this year. Haven't gotten to see it a ton. I had a pretty solid game against Clemson. Had a couple too many turnovers maybe, but you're going to get that from time to time. But I thought this was a really big game for both teams. Clemson kind of been struggling as of late. And then in kind of a down ACC, if you want to say, a win on the road at Duke would really help their resume, which just weren't quite able to get it. And Duke also has kind of been a little up and down as well this year. So kind of to get a win at home that you really needed to get against, which will be one of your fewer quality wins because of the ACC, especially the bottom half being so down and not really getting a bunch of quad one, quad two opportunities there. I think this was huge for both teams, but like I said, Duke, maybe a suspect foul call at the end. Obviously, like you said, that kind of got all worked out and everything with all the Clemson players and fans, and especially Brad Brunell, who might be coaching for his job right now. I thought it was a really good game for Duke to kind of get one back, get back on the right track. Obviously, had the big win last night as well. But this was one that Duke needed to kind of get back, get things back in order a little bit.
Yeah, and I think, you know, sometimes you need a call to go your way to really get the motor going. And I think this is what happened. I mean, Duke was able to win the game despite Roach and Filipkowski combining 3 of 16 from the field. So if you're able to pull out a win with, like, probably, like, your two biggest catalysts shooting that poorly from the field, I mean, that's huge for Duke. You know, Tyrese Proctor, really nice game with 18 points, and McCain with 21. I think those guys down the stretch are just going to be huge X factors for Duke in these coming games. And we'll see how they do against Carolina this Saturday. That's going to be a huge game. I think it's in Chapel Hill, right, Adam?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah,
I think on that, though.
I'm pretty sure this is.
It's at Chapel Hill.
Yeah, and then the one at the end of the year is at Duke.
At Duke, yep. I think they do it the last Saturday.
Yeah. Because it goes every other year. And the last time it ended at Duke, or the season ended with North Carolina at Duke, was 2 years ago when Coach K's career also ended.
You got to bring that up, man?
That would make this year. Since that was 2 years ago, that would make this year.
So that's the only reason you know it's at Duke this year, which was 2 years ago. Coach K's coaching career at Cameron ended it with North Carolina loss.
Yeah, and that helped. That was a big moment in history for me as a avid Coach K hater. But I apologize for you. But
and it's all good, man.
But that was a pretty historic moment for some of us.
Yeah, I understand. I do have some stats for you real quick. The most quad one wins this season in college basketball. UConn and Purdue lead with 70 apiece. Three teams right below them with 6 apiece, Houston, Arizona, and Wisconsin. And right below them, solo with 5 wins, quad one wins, is Duke.
Okay.
That's pretty good.
I did not expect that.
Honestly. I did not expect that either.
I saw it and I was like, this can't be right. And Duke also has the highest quad one winning percentage with a minimum of 5 games. You can't play one quad one win and, you know, you're obviously 1,000%. But they do have the highest quad one winning percentage, which the way that this season has gone for this team, those stats kind of, they don't make sense in a way. They feel like they shouldn't fit, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I was not expecting Duke to have 5 quad one wins, but... Yeah,
that is a little surprising. I mean, they'll have another opportunity on Saturday.
What are their quad one wins?
They weren't listed on the stat that I saw, but
you got Michigan State, Baylor. I would imagine. I would say probably at Pittsburgh, maybe at Virginia Tech.
Here, let me see if I can find them.
The Clemson one might have been it.
Clemson might have been
that's when I saw the stat was right after the Clemson win, so probably Clemson.
Yeah, if Clemson's top 30 in the net, then that's a quad one.
Yeah, their quad one wins are – so the quad one loss was Arizona at home. Yep. Michigan State on the Michigan State neutral site was a quad one win. Baylor neutral site was a quad one win. Pitt on the road, hanging on by a thread to a quad one win. And then Clemson at home was a quad one win, still is. And Virginia Tech on the road last night was a quad one win as well.
Okay, so we're up to six then.
No, that was five, right?
Was that five?
Was that five?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I did see that. Yeah, sorry. I did see that last night.
Yeah, so you're 5-1 in quad one, 0-3 in quad two, and 6-0 quad three, 5-0 quad four.
So quad two is the Blue Devils' kryptonite.
Yeah. And you got four games left in quad one, four left in quad two, one left in quad three, and two left in quad four as of right now. So, and that's always changing also, too.
Yeah, it's definitely fluctuating. Shooting over to another ACC game, though, North Carolina at Florida State. North Carolina was actually down a half by 5 points to Florida State, which Florida State has been kind of one of those surprising teams. But this North Carolina team just rallies in the second half. It feels like they're like always a second half team, regardless of how the first half goes. I mean, it just feels like they have been demolishing teams in the second half. Definitely coming out of the halftime locker room with something a little different. RJ Davis, another huge game, 24 points. Only shot 2-for-8 from the 3-point line, though. But the real story for UNC fans, though, is the huge game from Harrison Ingram. 17 rebounds, 10 defensive rebounds, and 7 of those being offensive. And then you ever see, Jack, you've been talking about the emergence of Elliott Cadeau, 6 assists, 3 turnovers in 28 minutes. But this UNC team just finds a way to win in the second half and feel like they have been all year.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was always going to be a little weird with Baycott coming back again. He hasn't quite probably had the season that he was hoping for. Obviously, had a rough game against Florida State, only 5 points, 4 rebounds. But it's kind of been the emergence of other guys. Like you said, I've been on the Cadeau bandwagon since day one. Ingram, with a huge game, getting 13 and 17 when Baycott wasn't really helping with the rebounds that much. And then obviously you got RJ Davis, who's one of the better scorers, if not one of the best scorers in the game right now. So they just keep finding ways to win. 17-3 right now. They're in a great spot. I think number 3 in the AP poll, something like that. But yeah, like I said, got a tough one on Saturday, but being at home for them will be nice to kind of help out with that. It's definitely going to be an electric atmosphere, but it has been interesting to see with this ACC conference being a little down this year. The two teams at the top are still Carolina and Duke, and both teams are Duke kind of more so hanging on by a thread, I feel like, at times, kind of a little bit more inconsistent. And Carolina, though, has seemed to kind of start to solidify in them as a potential number one, a potential one seed in the tournament. But they just keep getting better. It feels like that, like, you're going to have these scary games from time to time as conference play goes on. And you got a feisty Florida State team who rumors are it's Hamilton's last year. They might know that. They might not. But they might feel like it might be true, but not know for sure. So you got a really inspired group trying to get a winning season and get a tournament appearance for Leonard Hamilton in what could be his last year. So Florida State's going to be a tough team to beat, especially on the road when you got the situation like that. But Carolina went in, found themselves down, and found a way to come back in the second half. So I thought that was really encouraging from them to see kind of that in a tough environment to be able to get a win like that.
Yeah, and Carolina's pretty much done that all year. 9-0 in the ACC. I don't care how bad the ACC is. Being 9-0 in a power conference is always very impressive. One concern I have about UNC, though, although they've been great this year, although they're riding like a 11-game win streak right now, is their lack of depth. I mean, on Saturday, only 7 bench points. They haven't really had a 6-man off the bench really step up and give them good scoring and great minutes. Like the most minutes they had off the bench on Saturday was Seth Trimble with 16 minutes. I mean, that's a little concerning if one of your guys gets in foul trouble. because they're very reliant on the starting five. So that's one area of concern for North Carolina. But overall, I mean, they've been very good. I mean, RJ Davis is definitely an All-American right now. Harrison Ingram stepped up and really bringing a big presence on the defensive end. And Cormac Ryan hasn't even really gotten going from three yet. So I think when he does, this team's going to be very dangerous. I'd just like to see a little more depth.
Yeah, that definitely has been something that you can see in their games with majority of their minutes and points coming from all those starters, which they're, I mean, granted, they're, if it works, it works. UNC is actually 9-0 in conference play for the first time since 2001, which is something that feels like with the teams that they have had is kind of crazy. I mean, I know the ACC has been definitely more up. It was up back then, so but still 9-0 in conference play, first time since 2001 is crazy. They will be going for 10-0 tonight against Georgia Tech, though.
Yeah, and Georgia Tech's not an easy place to play either. So
I mean, Duke dropped one there.
Yeah, so I mean, it'll be a tough game for sure. But I think this is a game where, like Mikey, you mentioned the depth. Well, a couple minutes ago, Seth Trimble is a guy where I really would like to see him kind of start to get going. And I, Adam, I've talked about this all year. I mean, they're really lucky with the emergence of Cadeau, because Trimble could have been in position to kind of be having to be that guard next to RJ Davis if Cadeau didn't pan out how they thought he would. And right now it's been Trimble that hasn't quite been playing up to the expectations that we would have thought with the sophomore year leap. Like we talked about Tyrese Proctor not really getting that leap yet. Trimble really hasn't. And I would like to see him start to play a little bit better, but maybe this is a game for him tonight. I know Georgia Tech's a tough place to play, but not a great team this year. So maybe this is a night where you could start to see some of that depth come into play a little bit more and kind of help them out for what they're hoping for will be a long, long tournament run. So that's something I'd hope to see tonight from Carolina when they go play Georgia Tech.
Yeah, definitely. Just a couple more games from Saturday. We'll just brush over these real quick. Texas Tech gets a win over Oklahoma. BYU over Texas. Auburn loses to Mississippi State. Top 10 team that went down. Another top 10 team that went down was Kansas. That Iowa State game, speaking of places where it's tough to go in and win, Iowa State's definitely up there. So Kansas drops one there. But is there any other games I'm missing from Saturday? I know there was a bunch of them. We could probably talk for hours about them. Mike, any Mountain West teams in action on Saturday you want to touch on? Mountain West minute?
Sure. Utah State got a huge win over Boise State in overtime at Boise. Huge win for them. I think they've kind of established, I don't want to say that, but so far they've looked like the best team in the Mountain West, or maybe the team to beat in the Mountain West. Obviously it's a very deep conference and you could argue maybe New Mexico is better than Utah State or San Diego State's better. But I mean, that's a huge win and that's a really tough environment to win a road game in. And Utah State got it done in overtime on the road. We know how hard it is for a road team to go into overtime with a home team and win that overtime. So very impressive win for Utah State. Wyoming beat Colorado State in overtime. Colorado State's dropped three of their last five games, so they've been kind of on the downfall. I mean, that's pretty much it. Sunday, actually, yeah, one more thing, and then my Mountain West minute will be over. New Mexico destroyed Nevada on Sunday by 34 points, 89-55. I think you can argue that New Mexico is, in terms of talent, arguably a top 15 team in the country with the amount of scoring and the amount of athleticism they have. So that's my Mountain West minute.
Mountain West has definitely been something special this year. So that was the Mountain West minute from Mikey T. Real quick, though, we'll shoot over to the Valley minute. The Bradley Braves go into Indiana State, take them to overtime, and then give up 17 points in overtime to lose. Duke Dean, though, had an awesome game, 31 points, 6 for 9 from the three-point line, 11 for 20 from the field. But if Mark Titus's dream is correct, Bradley went into a Sweet 16 team and took them to overtime. So if that stands, Bradley is up to the par of the Sweet 16 teams.
There you go. I mean, we love seeing some Braves magic, and they got the war on 74 this weekend. I don't know who their midweek game is, but we will have boots on the ground at now known as CEFQ Arena, formerly Redbird Arena, but we will have boots on the ground there in Normal, Illinois this weekend for the first edition of the War on 74 of 2024. So looking forward to that. Big Valley game that you just can't miss. I mean,
that game's on Saturday, right?
Yeah.
Saturday will be a big day for me then. I got the War on 74 game and then Duke UNC. So I'll be glued to my television for
big
sure.
Big rivalry week for you.
Oh, yeah. but any other games you guys want to talk about from Saturday or this past week, anything?
No, I'm good.
So yesterday, though, the AP Top 25 was released. So we'll just brush over these, talk about them a little bit, some of the biggest changes. Wisconsin shoots up 7 spots to number 6 in the country. Duke shoots up 5 spots to number 7. Marquette is back in the top 10, up 5 spots to number 9. Iowa State with that big win over Kansas with a huge jump, up 11 spots to number 12 in the country. And Kentucky slides 4 spots to number 10 after that loss to South Carolina. Top 5 still remains the same with UConn, Purdue, and North Carolina. Houston and Tennessee to round those out. But looking at the top 25, is there anything that you guys saw, changes, drops, anything that kind of caught your eye?
I thought South Carolina should have been in the top 25. Big win over Kentucky, and then they won their game Saturday. I think they beat Missouri on Saturday. But right now, South Carolina is 17-3 right now with a win over Kentucky, a couple other good quad one wins. I thought they should have gotten the rankings.
Yeah, I think it's time for them to be ranked. As you know, I don't know if I have displayed this opinion on these airwaves yet, but not a huge fan of the AP Top 25. I think there's a lot of people that don't put a lot of work into it, and I'm not full in on the analytics of like the net and KenPom and stuff like that. As much as I love looking at it, I don't think it should be the sole determination either, but I think there's guys in the AP poll that really don't put the time in, and I think that's why you see rankings like this that sometimes kind of make no sense a little bit, especially with like the big example this week, I think would be South Carolina. I get they don't have a ton of great wins, but I mean, they beat Kentucky. They've only lost 3 times. I don't care who you're playing in college basketball. If you only have 3 losses by the start of February, You're a pretty good team and probably a top 25 team in the country.
Especially
in the SEC. And I'm sure, I don't know their schedule off the top of my head, but I'm sure the road's going to get a little harder as they keep going through conference play. But man, they have a pretty good year going so far. And I was a little surprised, like you said, Mike, a little surprised they weren't ranked. But I'm blanking on the guy's name who's the coach there now. I know he came from UT Chattanooga, I'm pretty sure, but
I think it's is it Monte Harris?
Whenever I think of South Carolina, I just think of Sendarius Thornwall. That's it.
yeah.
It's one that comes to mind.
And Frank Martin.
Lamont Paris.
I'm pretty sure he's with Chattanooga, and I think this is his second year now because I think he was coaching Chattanooga in 2022 when Illinois played him in the tournament, but. Regardless, that's just sometimes once I get a coach's name in my head, it takes me down a rabbit hole. But yeah, anyways, I thought South Carolina should have been ranked as well. But the top 5 makes sense. I think UConn, I was big this year on I thought UConn should have been number 1, not only because they were defending champions, obviously, but they brought enough guys back and replaced the guys that they lost with a guy like I can replace a guy like Hawkins with Cam Spencer, who might not be as good as Hawkins, but is right there as one of the elite shooters in the country. Tristan Newton takes a bigger role now. Klingon obviously takes over the starting role for Sanogo from last year. And then you kept Caravan as well. So, and also they hadn't not beat a non-conference opponent by less than 10. So I've always thought that UConn was the best team in the country this year, and just waiting for them to prove me wrong at some point. But I think the top five is good too. But yeah, I mean, you had some changes there here and there, but overall, I thought it was solid for an AP poll.
One team though that did shoot up into the top 10 was Wisconsin, now at number 6. That win over Michigan State was a super fun game to watch, but AJ Storr on that team is awesome. I think he had 28 points against Michigan State, something like that.
Yeah.
But so it's good to see Wisconsin in the top 10. I feel like they definitely deserve it. It feels like they are a top 10 team in the country.
Yeah, we talked about it on the last episode. It was that Providence game that I thought, man, this team isn't for real. Like I thought they were going to be good this year, but I didn't think they were going to be number 6 in the country by any means. But I thought they were going to be a pretty solid team this year and maybe contend for at least the top 4 spot in the Big Ten, get that double bye in the Big Ten tournament, and then maybe throw a Hail Mary at beating Purdue for the conference championship. You never know. But I was not expecting this year, and they are, like you said, number 6 now. They got a big one against Purdue coming up this weekend, I think on Saturday, but maybe a different day. I can't remember when they play, but I know they got Purdue this weekend. So Sunday they play Purdue. But that will be a huge game for Wisconsin at home against Purdue. That will be a huge Big Ten game with big time implications on how the conference title goes out. But yeah, Wisconsin, one of those teams that's been really surprising this year. And like you said, AJ Storr, I think, is a huge part of that.
Yeah, and I think Wisconsin's got as best of a shot as any other team in the Big Ten, or the best shot out of any other team in the Big Ten to challenge Purdue for the Big Ten regular season title. Obviously, Illinois has been good and can do that too, but I think Wisconsin has the edge over them. Another big thing that I was thinking about the other day with Wisconsin, I mean, you look at AJ Storr, and then, I mean, this is a little off topic with Wisconsin, but St. John's transfers this year have been huge for other teams. I mean, if you think about it, you have AJ Storr who's Wisconsin's leading scorer. David Jones is Memphis's leading scorer. You had Posh Alexander come to Butler and do big things. And then there's one other transfer. Adewusu with Seton Hall and Soriano. Can you imagine if that team stuck together, that with Rick Pitino, that would have been be competing with UConn for Big East title.
Yeah, St. John's transfer. I hadn't thought about that yet, but St. John's transfers have been playing pretty crazy everywhere else. And obviously St. John's is having a pretty solid year themselves, but maybe Slick Rick wasn't right on a couple of those, pushing some of them out. But they've obviously found some, or been playing great at their new spots that they found. So that's awesome to see. But the thing that I think that, not to take this on another tangent, but the thing that's such so divisive over fans and coaches and players of in college athletics with the transfer portal, seeing it be used for good is really cool, because that's what it was intended for, and hasn't fully played out that way. With you see a lot of guys making moves that they probably shouldn't, or entering the portal at all when they probably shouldn't, and then going somewhere. The biggest one for me this year has been Nick Timberlake, the kid from Towson. Took a bag at Kansas, and now he's not really playing that much. So it sucks to see that some of these guys will just kind of take the biggest bag that's out there and not really worry about fit and everything like that. But these St. John's transfers have found some homes for themselves and gotten to be pretty successful players at the spots they're at now. So that's enjoying to see how the transfer portal can be used for good from time to time.
Yeah, just to wrap up a little bit for the AP Top 25, some other changes here. Arizona has dropped out of the top 10 with the loss at Oregon. They're now sitting at number 11. Creighton's up four spots, number 13. Illinois has dropped back from number 10 out of the top 10 to number 14. Texas Tech enters the top 15 with that electric win over the Sooners in Norman, like we mentioned. And then Auburn, like we said earlier, drops back eight spots, number 16, with that loss at Mississippi State. Dayton up five spots, now into the top 25, up to 21. And Oklahoma's definitely the biggest faller here, drops back 12 spots, number 23. And then Mikey T, we got another Mountain West team in the top 20. New Mexico's up six spots, number 19.
Yeah, they're good.
They are good. And that Mountain West game tonight with Colorado State and San Diego State is going to be awesome to watch.
That's going to be an atmosphere out in Colorado.
Yeah, we got a lot of good bump tonight.
Glued to the TV tonight.
A lot of good bump tonight.
Yeah, tonight's a great night of basketball.
I feel like we get this every once in a while. Like, you hope to get it at least once a week, but if not, maybe once every 2 weeks where you have a midweek day that's just loaded too that can compete with any other Saturday. But we got, like tonight, we got South Carolina going on the road to Tennessee. A Big Ten battle between Iowa and Indiana. That is what it is. But Illinois going on the road to Ohio State. They need that one. Marquette goes on the road to Nova. Like I was saying earlier, Nova kind of needs to get back on track. And this will be a big opportunity for them to do that. Cats need one tonight. Texas Tech, TCU, Oklahoma going to Kansas State. Mississippi State, Mississippi, two teams that are kind of battling to solidify themselves in the tournament a little bit. I know they both have good records, but not necessarily great resumes. Michigan State, Michigan, Oklahoma State, Kansas. Is this another one where Bill Self gives Oklahoma State a big win for his alma mater? We'll see, but. And then, yeah, like you mentioned, that Mountain West game as well with Colorado State and San Diego State. But, yeah, great night of bump tonight.
Yeah, a little bit of everything from each conference, too, which is nice.
And then the real big battle between Louisville and Clemson, I know a lot of people are excited for that game.
The Louisville-Clemson game?
Yeah, that was a joke, sorry.
Okay, that's what I thought.
My bad.
Real quick though, quick little plug here. You can find those games that we just listed. We do tweet them out. So go on ahead and follow the Twitter or the X at the Empty Gym Pod. You can also find all the AP Top 25 analysis list. We're going to try to be a lot more active on that Twitter, try to get some stuff out. So definitely give that a follow. Keep you up to date on just about everything there is in the college basketball world.
Hey, listen, the month of February. I don't know what I was going to say. The month of February is the biggest month of college basketball leading up to March. This is where teams boost their resume for Selection Sunday. You're going to need the coverage. You're going to want to know who's playing well, who's not, in order to have a good bracket for Selection Sunday. This is the place to go. Our social platforms, follow, like, read them, because we got good analysis.
Subscribe to the YouTube.
Yeah. Subscribe to the YouTube. But if that's all we got for the AP Top 25, we'll move on to the bubble teams. We kind of did mention a little bit of those teams in the AP Top 25 that have some NCAA tournament host might be on the bubble. So, but Lunardi did release his bracketology today, actually. Right now, the last four byes, he has Memphis, Texas, Providence, and Texas A&M. Last four in, he has Nebraska, Seton Hall, Colorado, and Boise State. First four out, Villanova, Cincinnati, Washington State, and Gonzaga. Kind of weird to see Gonzaga in this bubble list for the first time in what feels like a while. And then finally, that next four out, he's got Oregon, Kansas State, Florida, and sorry, boys, he has the Butler Bulldogs listed in the next four out.
That's fine. We're good. Where
Bulletin board material.
Yeah, we got Six of our next seven games are quad one, so a lot of opportunities to boost that resume for the Dogs.
So is there anything that sticks out there to you guys? Memphis definitely has been sliding a lot.
I mean, yeah, they've been playing terrible. So they deserve to be sliding.
Simply terrible, yeah.
They have been. They've,
that's the kind of analysis lost. You get here at the EGP.
Well, yeah. I mean, when you drop
how it is, but
in South Florida and UAB, you know, you're going to drop. And, you know, right now, I mean, listen, Memphis does have good wins keeping them in the tournament, but losing three straight games in the American is not good. I mean, Memphis has to, they're right now, they're sixth in the American, they're sixth in the American right now, tied with SMU. If you're Memphis, you have to be either second or at worst third in that conference. And to be sixth in that conference right now is pretty unacceptable. And, you know, they're continuing to slide down. Could continue to be ugly for Memphis because they have not looked good recently.
Yeah. Another team, though. Oh, go ahead, Jack.
All you.
Another team that I'm actually the way the season started, definitely this team's been riddled with injuries in the last four is Texas A&M. But they were they a top 10 team at one point at the start of the season? I know they were like 15th or 14th in the country at some point, but
if
they've
not,
definitely
they
been
were
sliding.
Close.
Yeah, but
and
a lot of injuries
by
on that
some
team.
People to be SEC champs too. Some people also including me.
Wait, you picked them?
No,
I thought you picked Tennessee.
I picked Tennessee. But I had Texas A&M second.
I
was. Close
I know you're really high on the Volunteers this year.
I was
year.
Big on the Vols in November, which I'm still big on them now too. But
I mean, any team that has Dalton Connect on it.
Yeah, but yeah, like you said with Texas A&M, a team that was picked by some to win the conference. Not me, as I remember now, but team picked by some to win the conference. Got great guards with Wade Taylor and Tyrese Radford. That this team just hasn't had the season that we thought they were going to have. And now they're in a spot where they're kind of battling. Like, they got a big win over Kentucky a couple weeks ago that they really needed. But, yeah, this team is not in the spot that we thought they were going to be in by any means at the start of this year.
Another team, though, that's in the last four and that I definitely want to see in the tournament is Seton Hall. Such a fun team to watch. I really hope they get in the tournament.
Yeah, they've kind of struggled without Kadari Richmond the last couple games, but when he's playing, man, they're as good as anyone in the Big East. They've gone and beat teams on the road. They've beat teams at home. They're a good ball club when they got Kadari. And how long he'll be out, we don't know. It's for undisclosed reasons. I think that he'll be back soon from stuff that I've heard, but you never really know with stuff like that when it's the undisclosed stuff. But when he's on the floor for them, Seton Hall is as good as anyone. They got a great environment up in Newark, too. So that's a team that I think if they, depending on how long Richmond's out, if they can kind of scratch and claw their way into the tournament, they're going to be a team that no one wants to play at all. With Shaheen has them playing real physical, real tough, great defensively, can make shots on the offensive end. They got couple bucket getters with, like I said, with Kadari, and then Adewusu can kind of bully some people, some smaller guards into the paint, kind of play that booty ball like we talked about a little bit with Illinois a couple weeks ago. But yeah, that's a team that I think definitely no one's going to want to play if they're like if it's like a 7-10 matchup or something like that, and then they beat the 7 seed, and then they got a 2 seed coming up, or if they sneak up a little higher and maybe get a 9 or 8 and got to play the 1 seed in the round of 32. That's going to be a tough game for anyone. So Seton Hall's definitely been fun to watch.
Yeah. Any other bubble teams you guys want to talk about? Any team that's not listed here that you might think is on the bubble right now?
Well, I just want to touch on Colorado. I don't really know what they've done or who they've beaten to really be warranted into the last four in right now. I don't even think they should be. I think they should be at the very best in the next four out right now. I just don't really understand why they're in the last four in. Like, they haven't really beat anyone. Their best win is Miami, And, I mean, they beat Miami, who's not even in the tournament right now, who's not even really being considered into the tournament right now. I can't understand why they're in the last four in, besides maybe, like, their talent. But their talent hasn't really translated to much.
It might be the Deion effect.
It could be the Deion effect. Yeah, that's true.
Cross in sports.
The Pac-12, the last year of the Pac-12, they sacrificed a terrible basketball conference for an electric last year of Pac-12 football in the conference. Because that conference last year was awesome in football. This year in basketball is not been what it was supposed to be. I mean, USC is not good. It seems like Arizona's just going to run away with that. But then again, they just lost to Oregon. So Pac-12 is a mess right now, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's struggled the last couple of years, but you kind of had some top-heavy guys with teams like Arizona. UCLA has been really good the last couple of years up until this year. Then who knows what's going on with that dumpster fire right now. And then you had teams like Utah that would make a splash every once in a while. Colorado made a splash a little bit. Arizona State, you never really know with them. I feel like they always have a ton of talent, but always have a lot of issues. But this year, man, the Pac-12 has just not really been it, and last couple of years either. So it's tough to find quality wins there. If you're a team like Colorado that's kind of on the bubble, you really got to take care of a business in terms of the lower teams, like your like an Arizona or Washington State or an Oregon State, stuff like that. Because like even teams like Oregon aren't as good as they normally are in past years. So they kind of lack that opportunity to find those big quality wins. So a team like Colorado got to take control over all those lesser teams and maybe scrape out a win against a team like Arizona or something like that to kind of boost that resume. But another team that I thought was going to be really good, I think I did have them win in the Pac-12, was USC, and they are just awful. But it's just Pac-12 this year.
But to wrap up with that, Lenardi right now has Purdue as the number one overall seed, UNC as a one seed, and UConn, and then Houston to finish it out as the one seeds as of right now. So that's just kind of a little bit of bracketology bubble teams that Lunardi has when he just released. But I think for the most part, he hit the nail on the head with bubble teams in a way. Another bubble team that they have is Texas, and I did pick Texas to win the SEC. They're in the SEC now, right?
No, they're still in the Big 12.
Okay, yeah.
Last year, the Big 12.
I did pick them to win the Big 12, yes. But hey, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Well, you guys have anything else today you want to talk about?
I'm all good. I could just touch on the conference breakdown real quick for for Lenardi's bracketology. Just three teams in the ACC and three teams in the Pac-12. So just very disappointing years for those two conferences. It's going to be really hard for a team like Miami and Virginia kind of work their way back in the bubble because they just don't have a ton of opportunities to pick up quad one wins unless they play a team like Carolina or Duke. So just a tough year for the ACC. I know I kind of touched on that last week, but want to reiterate that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, not a ton of other great games during the week. Wisconsin goes to Nebraska on, I think, Thursday. So that could be a good game. Couple other ones throughout the week. But Saturday, a loaded slate. Before we wrap up, I'll kind of run through the slate a little bit and see thoughts on any of these games for you guys. But we got UConn going to St. John's. That's going to be an electric environment for St. John's. They kind of got the Garden rocking again, which is really cool to see with Patino being back. So number one, UConn with the tough road test there. With how well they've been playing as well of late. You got Houston going to Kansas in a Big 12 matchup. That's going to be crazy. Top 10 teams. Kansas kind of falling back a little bit. Not big time, but a couple losses in conference so far that maybe you wouldn't expect. But they got a chance for a big time win against Houston, and Houston's got a chance for a big time road win at Kansas. So that'll be a big game. Obviously, Duke, North Carolina as well. Another ranked, first ranked with Iowa State and Baylor in the Big 12. And Tennessee, Kentucky, another top 10 matchup between rivals. So a big weekend in college basketball this weekend. And then you got a couple games Sunday too with Purdue, Wisconsin, another top six matchup between those two teams. Providence, Nova, two teams in the Big East that are kind of battling on the bubble to try to get in. So a lot of good basketball this weekend. But any games sticking out to you guys?
I just think that triple header on ESPN with Houston, Kansas, Duke, Carolina, Kentucky, Tennessee. And then after that, too, Gonzaga, St. Mary's, little late night West Coast Conference action. I know you love that hobby. It's going to be a hell of a Saturday. So strap in, because we got a lot of basketball to watch.
Yeah, I'm just mainly focused on this Duke UNC game. Carolina Hate Week has officially started. I'm also going to merge that with ISU Redbirds Hate Week. So big week of hate for me. Carolina Hate Week, Redbird Hate Week. I'm very excited, though, for Saturday.
Yeah, it should be an electric day with a ton of great games. Starting to see these Saturday slates get better and better as the year goes on. And that'll be the first Saturday in February, and that's where we really start to see teams either separate in conferences and separate amongst the country, or we see conference title races start to heat up a little bit too, and also the bubble starts to come into more and more into factor. So starting to get to really fun part of the year, getting closer and closer to March Madness, which is always fun. But yeah, it all starts this Saturday with a great slate. But that's all we got. Appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, appreciate you guys listening.